Good morning. Welcome to the press briefing of the United Nations in Geneva. Today is Tuesday, 22nd of April. I hope you have spent a good long weekend. And we start this shorter week with a short briefing, but an important one too. I have the great pleasure to welcome Zlatan Milicic, who is the country director of the World Food Programme in Ethiopia. Mr. Milicic is coming to us from Addis Ababa to tell us about the situation of hunger and malnutrition in Ethiopia. I'll give him the floor straight away. And we also have Mashlin Birungi online who accompanies him. So, Mr. Milicic, you have the floor.
Thank you very much. Good morning to all, and thank you for the opportunity to brief you today. My name is Zlatan Milicic. I am the country director of the World Food Programme in Ethiopia. Ethiopia is facing a rapidly deteriorating humanitarian situation. Hunger and malnutrition are on the rise. They're mainly driven by a deadly combination of climate shocks, conflict, economic instability, and displacement. WFP is responding, but without urgent funding, our ability to deliver life-saving food and nutrition support is severely at risk. Over 10 million people in Ethiopia are acutely food insecure. This includes 3 million people displaced by conflict and extreme weather. Malnutrition rates are alarmingly high. In total, over 4 million pregnant women, breastfeeding women, and young children are in urgent need of treatment for malnutrition. In some areas, Somali, Oromia, Afar, and Tigray regions, child wasting has passed the 15% emergency threshold. The risk of another drought looms, particularly in the Somali region, where families are still recovering from the devastating drought of 2020 that lasted until 2023. Instability in neighboring countries is also increasing humanitarian needs in Ethiopia. WFP already supports 800,000 refugees in the country, including 100,000 Sudanese refugees. The deteriorating security situation in South Sudan's Upper Nile state could drive even more refugees in Ethiopia. In fact, some have already come. Despite our underfunded response and against the odds, if I could say, which several other organizations are also facing, in the quarter one of 2025, WFP has provided food and nutrition support to over 3 million people. We have already treated 740,000 children and pregnant and breastfeeding women for malnutrition and also provided 50,000 families with fresh food vouchers. We are scaling up our anticipatory action in drought-prone areas with early warning messages, cash transfers, and also rehabilitating the rangeland. We are delivering daily school meals to nearly 500,000 children, prioritizing those areas that are hit by conflict and hunger. Now, we've been stretching our resources as far as we can to reach only the most vulnerable communities, and mostly with reduced food rations. For example, 60% rations for most of the 800,000 refugees for the past 18 months, and 80% rations for the displaced and food insecure, some severely, in Ethiopians for the past 9 months. But now we are at the breaking point. We've been left no choice but suspend completely the treatment for 650,000 malnourished women and children simply because we've run out of commodities and funding. By June, food and cash assistance for 800,000 refugees will also run out. We risk losing our ability to support new arrivals. Violence in Amhara continues to disrupt our operations too, threatening access to over 500,000 people. We are now operating with just about 50% of last year's funding. This means that 3.6 million vulnerable people could lose access to WFP assistance in the coming weeks unless funding arrives urgently. This is half the number that we have planned to assist and reach in 2025. WFP requires $222 million between now and September to maintain our operations and actually scale up to reach our target of 7.2 million people in the year. We have the teams, the logistics, the capacities in place, partners, our staff. What we lack are the resources to act at the scale that this situation demands. Ethiopia is absorbing crisis after crisis. What is particularly worrisome is that drought, ongoing conflict, refugee influxes are looming shocks which could push communities over the edge. Our resources and people resilience are becoming exhausted. We therefore urge donors to step up support to WFP so we can continue delivering life-saving assistance and prevent a further deterioration of this humanitarian situation. WFP is ready, we have the capacity. We know where the needs are. We have the systems in place to ensure that most vulnerable are reached and on time. But without urgent donor action, we will watch this crisis accelerate. Millions of people are just one shock away from falling into a catastrophe. Thank you for your attention, and I'm very happy to take any questions.
Thank you very much, Mr. Mirisic. I open the floor to questions. I'll start in the room with Nina Larsson, AFP, English.
Yeah. Hello, thank you very much for doing this briefing. I was just wondering, you're talking about the severe lack of funding, if you could connect that to the U.S. cuts and say sort of how those specifically have impacted your operations. Thank you.
We answer a question by question, Mr. Mirisic, so go ahead, please.
Thank you. Well, I would connect our financial situation and our funding problems to all our donors. On one hand, we're very proud to have between 50 and 20 donors in this country, which means that we have a broad-based support from our donors. However, many, if not most, have been cutting their assistance to Ethiopia and to WFP lately. With the US specific funding, we were very happy to receive these exceptions from the stop orders. So all the contracts that we have been implementing. And we hope that the contributions for 2025 would come, but they haven't yet. So we are hopeful. With other donors, we have had some who provided some assistance to us at the end of last year and beginning of this year. And that was mainly the reason why WFP was one of the organizations in Ethiopia who probably did most compared to its targets, compared to all the other UN or NGOs. We know many who have stopped because of some stop orders. We continued. We had to cut rations, but we didn't have to cut numbers. But now situation is reaching the point where all those resources are coming towards the end in June, maybe July. And that's why we feel that it's very important that we try to improve the situation to make sure that in the second half of the year, some country, parts of the country will have their lean season. So very important time that we will be able to deliver at scale to all our beneficiaries.
Nina has a follow-up.
Yeah, hi, thanks. So I just to make sure that I understood correctly, you say that the U.S. funding cuts, you received the exemptions for that, but if I understood correctly, you haven't received any of the funds yet. So I just wanted to, from the U.S. And also, if you could just say a little bit more about what the impact will be on people if you are actually forced to dramatically cut back your activities in Ethiopia. Thank you.
Mr. Mirisic?
Well, as I tried to explain, we haven't cut our activities in Ethiopia drastically yet. We have been cutting food rations because of the overall funding situation. As I said, refugees 18 months, others 9 months. So situation hasn't been great, but we have been you know, going through, and we continue, and we still continue now. What is particularly important now is that our nutritious foods are running out, so we're stopping that program unless something comes really fast, and we are looking, and we are hopeful, but nothing has come yet. And also other programs will be coming towards the end of the resources, the food commodities we have, such as refugees, in about June, and some other emergency programs as well. Now, we have received exemption for all the contracts for 2024 from the US donor, and those are still being implemented and finalized. We have even received one for 2025 towards the end of last year, so that one has also helped to keep us where we are, as well as many of our 15, 17 donors' contributions during 24 or even those in 25. But now we're reaching the time when we could certainly do more and more urgently and fast. And that's why it would be really good if some of these donors would really speed up their decisions for Ethiopia, for the World Food Program, so we can really resume or continue some of these important assistance programs in emergency, for refugees, for nutrition, but also anticipatory action and resilience, because investing a dollar there saves $5 later when the crisis hits, and so forth.
Yes, go ahead.
Has anything else? Sorry, thank you very much. I did understand that you hadn't yet drastically cut your operations. I was asking what the impact will be if you end up having to do that. If you could just describe the impact on the people on the ground. I mean, are we going to see people starving to death? You know, if you could just explain a little bit more of what will happen. Thank you.
Well, I can certainly do my best, but I cannot really be very specific because I don't know. Number one, the government of Ethiopia leads humanitarian response in their country, and they put noticeable resources into different humanitarian programs, including food. There is also a few NGOs in a consortium that are also a food actor or player in Ethiopia. So between the government, them, and us, we really try to cover the whole country. What I can tell you is that if we stop assistance, hopefully some others might be better with resources and can step in the same way as we stepped in when some of the NGOs had a break and could not assist. What I can say is that 4 million people plus, women, pregnant women, breastfeeding mothers, and malnourished children, all malnourished, will not get assistance. Now, this assistance to them is already a treatment, almost like a medicine. So if you have a malnourished person, a child, that are becoming more malnourished, not giving them nutritious assistance and food, you know, will certainly put them in quite a desperate situation. Similarly, people who are on the edge of availability of food and access to them, if you don't give them food, they will be facing significant hunger. So I don't want to predict what's going to happen. I would hope that we would get the resources and put in place measures to really do our best to assist them. But if they don't receive assistance, we will have serious consequences.
Thank you very much. I think it's clear. Any other question in the room? Yes. Yeah, wait a second. Let me see if there's anything else on Ethiopia. Or on the platform, questions on Ethiopia? I don't see any. So, Mr. Milicic, if it's okay with you, our journalist from Ria Novosti would like to ask you a question on another matter. Not to him. Oh, sorry. To whom?
Okay.
So I can free Mr. Milicic. Okay, so thank you very much, Mr. Milicic, for alerting us on this very dire situation. Good luck with your work. Thanks again for being with us. And maybe Mashrim can help us sending your notes, your briefing notes to the journalist. Thanks again, and good luck with your important work. Yes, so let's go now to Yuri. You had a question for whom?
One question. It is the same question for Tariq, Babar, and Jens, just in the
perspective. They are all online.
Yeah, I know. Just for the perspective of different agencies, how they think and how they felt it. We had a small ceasefire in Ukraine during 3 years. During three days. I wanted to know if WHO, UNHCR, and OCHA have seen that on the ground, what it changed for them during the ceasefire, if they were able to do more job, and if their people on the ground felt it. Thanks.
Okay, so I'm looking at my colleague virtually, Jens, Tariq, or Babar, who would like to, I see Babar has put his camera, so Barbara, go ahead.
Thank you, Des. I don't have any updates as such, but we can check. Tariq or Jens, maybe you have more on that.
Tariq, I see your face on the screen.
Hi. Thanks, Yuri. I would need really to check with our colleagues in our country office. So happy to connect you with them, and they will tell you if we have anything more in detail.
Jens, do you have anything you would like to continue?
Yeah.
Go ahead.
Yes, thanks, Yuri. I think you're going to have a full strike of three. I also have to check with the office if there has been any discernible impact of this. So let me come back to you. Thank you.
Yeah. That is. Thank you very much to the colleagues to take notes and answer, Yuri. We have indeed took note of this and of the announcement, but also on the resumption of some firings, as it has been noted yesterday by the spokesperson of the Secretary General. What we really want to see is an end to the war in line with relevant UN resolutions, international law, and the territorial integrity of Ukraine. That's what I can tell you on my side, but I'm confident that colleagues will come back with a little bit more. I see lots of questions for all these virtual briefers, so I'll start with Mohammed.
Thank you so much, Alessandra. My question is for Jens. Jens, as you know, there has been no aid entry into Gaza for over 50 days. What is the latest situation of people over there? How they feed themselves and their children? Can you share with us the latest situation on the ground, please? Thank you.
Jens, go ahead.
Yes. Thank you very much, Alessandra. So indeed, I think it was yesterday, it was the 50th day without any humanitarian aid coming in to the Gaza Strip, and for an even longer period of no commercial supplies entering the Gaza Strip. As you know, we sent you every day lines on what is happening there. I think if you read through just the past few days and the past week, you can see a clear tendency towards total disaster. We have said, and we've said that because it's true, that right now is probably the worst humanitarian situation we have seen throughout the war in Gaza. Thank you.
Mohammed, you have a follow-up? Okay, I had seen another hand. Mr. Liang. Go ahead.
Thank you, Alexandra. My question goes to Tariq from WHO. It is related to what happened 3 days back when the US, in its newly established website, thecovid.gov, laid a heavy criticism on the WHO, saying that its response to the COVID was an abject failure. And in addition, it also said that the pandemic agreement, which everyone tried very hard to make breakthrough, which everyone knows is a major achievement, harms the US interest. So my question to the Tariq is whether WHO plans to make any response to such remarks with regards to the pandemic agreement. Thanks.
Thank you very much. Tariq will answer you.
Thank you. Well, I think the answer has been provided by member states who agreed last week on a draft proposal for the pandemic agreement. So it showed that that if we work together, if countries work together with WHO acting as secretariat, the agreement can be reached. Now, we have to wait for the World Health Assembly for this draft proposal to be adopted. Countries are also working on a resolution that will accompany this draft proposal. So I think really member states have shown that the issue of pandemic preparedness and response is really important, and that some lessons have been learned. As for WHO, throughout COVID-19, all of you have been following us. We have been providing guidance, information, support to all those countries who asked us. We were really trying to help everyone and try to tackle the virus. So we will continue to do so. And the lessons learned are basically something that guided member states to work on a pandemic agreement. And just to touch really on the issue of the origin of the COVID-19, because it was also on this website that you mentioned, we have been consistently saying that we did not have we had not received the necessary information to determine the origin. And until we have information, and we constantly kept asking China and anyone else who has information to provide us so, all the hypotheses are still on the table.
Nina.
Hi, this is for Tariq. So just a follow-up, quick follow-up on that. First, how concerned are you that still a member state for a while, is unilaterally, declaring what the source of the pandemic was, just on that question? And then also, I wanted to ask you about the cuts at WHO because of the U.S. withdrawal and cuts. And I understand that there are some decisions being made about different divisions that are seeing cuts. I was wondering if you could give us an update on what you're seeing there. Thank you.
Well, on the issue of the origin of COVID-19, as I said, the only thing we have we can say that that for the time being, we have not received all the information we would need to determine the origin. We have established SAGO, Scientific Expert Committee on the origin of the pathogen that had two missions. One is really to look into origin of COVID-19, and second one to prepare a framework on how in the future the issue of the origin of any outbreak should be dealt with. So they have issued a framework that gives countries a sort of a lead how to respond the next time there is outbreak on looking into the origin of the outbreak. Now they are working on the report on COVID-19. They issued a preliminary report, but again, we have not really received all the information. We kept asking for China or anyone else who has information to come forward so we can collectively try to find what was the origin of COVID-19, because it is important for several reasons. Unfortunately, we have not been there. So far, from our perspective, all hypotheses are still out there, and we cannot really determine which one is the right one. When it comes to effect of funding cuts, you've heard that Director General, and we've been saying that we are looking into cost saving measures on operational level, on a staff level. So discussions are ongoing. I don't have details, but you have heard, for example, that there was a hiring freeze, and then we are looking into how to deal with this decreased budget that we have right now.
Thank you very much. Don't see other hands in the room, so I'll go to Antonio.
Hello, good morning.
Yeah, so, go ahead.
The date for the funeral of the Pope Francis has been just announced. It will be this Saturday. I want to know if any leader of the UN-based agencies is planning to attend. Maybe you don't know yet, but if you decide later, any of the agencies, can you please let us know?
Yeah, well, on the side of the Secretary General, the spokesman said yesterday that they were looking, I read what he said, he said, let's see when there is a date, now we have a date, and then we will update you on that. But we are fully aware of this possibility. But I don't know if any of my colleagues knows, if any of their bosses, maybe it's a little bit early to say that. I don't see anybody volunteering, so probably it's still a little bit early. Antonio, we will update you on that. Any other question before I read my announcement to me or to colleagues? I don't see any hand up. So let me tell you a few things. So first of all, let me start with this because it's this morning and it's happening at the Palais. As you may have seen from the messages that we have sent you, there is an event taking place this morning at the Palais called the Third Dialogue on Artificial Intelligence for One Humanity, Human-Centered AI. This is organized by the UN Alliance of Civilization. It's taking place in room 20 and will conclude this afternoon, I think at 2:30 if I'm not wrong. Sorry, no, there is also an afternoon session. Some of you have asked me if this was open to the press. Of course, yes, you can go with cameras. I've checked with the organizers. And of course, you're very welcome to listen to the very numerous speakers, quite high-level speakers that have been listed, including your colleague, Catherine Fiancon. As president of ACANU. And also speaking about events happening in these days, let me inform you, as we've told you in writing, that as part of their joint mobilization strategy leading up to COP30, the president of Brazil, Luiz Inácio Lula da Silva, and the secretary general, Antonio Guterres, are convening a small but representative group of heads of states and governments for virtual closed-door meeting on 23rd April tomorrow at 8 o'clock New York time to discuss strengthening global efforts to tackle the climate crisis and accelerate a just energy transition. Today, ahead of this closed-door meeting, we will host an embargoed background briefing for international media with the COP30 president designate, who's Andrea Correa del Lago, and special advisor to the Secretary General on Climate Action, Selwyn Hart. And this is to preview the upcoming meeting and provide you with relevant context. This is a background briefing. It's online, so everybody's welcome to participate also from Geneva. And if you want to join, we have the address on the invitation we have sent you. But of course, it's easier to do it. You have to contact my colleague, Martina Donlon from our Department of Global Communication in New York at donlon@un.org, and you still have the time to do it this morning. As they are sleeping, she will find it when she wakes up. So don't hesitate to connect with Martina if you want to listen to this background briefing with Selwyn Hart and Andrea Correa do Lago. Also, staying on climate issues, you, I think, all know that the third UN conference on oceans, ocean conference, will be held in France, in Nice, from the 9th to the 13th of June. It's co-hosted by the government of France and the government of Costa Rica, and the overarching theme of the conference is accelerating action and mobilizing all actors to conserve and sustainably use the ocean. The reason for which I'm already telling you this is that the media accreditation for the press for the conference has now opened and will be open until the 17th of May. So please apply if you are intending to go. There is an online link that we have sent to you, and the accreditation is done through our accreditation colleagues in New York. But if you need any further information about the conference or about the accreditation, don't hesitate to ask us here at UNIS in Geneva. Just a reminder, staying also on issues related to conventions, that the Basel, Rotterdam and Stockholm Convention Secretariats are holding a press conference for you. This is Friday at 12 p.m., just after the regular briefing. And we will have the Executive Secretary of the Basel, Rotterdam and Stockholm Convention, Rolf Fayet, also the Deputy Executive Secretary, David Ogden, and then we will have Christine Fuel, Executive Secretary at Interim of the Rotterdam Convention. This is going to be held on Friday, as I said. Last but not least, the Committee on the Elimination of Racial Discrimination opened its 115th session this morning. The countries that they will review are Ukraine, Mauritius, Republic of Korea, Gabon, and Kyrgyzstan. They will also hold an informal meeting with the state parties to the International Convention on the Elimination of All Forms of Racial Discrimination and a half day of general discussion on a proposed general recommendation on reparations. This is going to be Thursday and Friday. This week, the Committee Against Torture is continuing to review countries' report. They will have Turkmenistan on the 23rd and again Ukraine on the 24th. And this is what I had for you as announcements. Is there any other question? Brief briefing? No? I'm looking at the journalist here or on the platform. So thank you very much, and we'll see each other on Friday. Thanks.